Amar Mahadevan.
What's up?
Happy anniversary.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, please. Folks, welcome to the Emporium pop-up space. Thank you to the Emporium staff for the build-out, for welcoming us here into the space in Logan Square this evening. We are celebrating the one-year anniversary of a podcast, an interview talk show that my dear friend Tar Mahadevan and I do on WGN Radio. We want to thank Ernie for coming out, the producer tonight. We also want to thank, of course, our sponsor, Stolen Spirits, that is in the building. Thank you, Stolen. Thank you for showing up in a big way. Thank you for providing spirits for the show. Thank you to Max, who has worked effortlessly, tirelessly to make sure that the corner store is popping. He actually helped with the build out. I want to thank Don't Fret and Revise for also doing the art on the outside of the corner store tonight, and all the artists who contributed. Tara, it's been a good year.
It has been a good year. I can't believe it's already been a year.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy, right?
It's been fun talking.
Okay, I think we're 2 weeks short of a year exactly, but
I think we dropped right after Thanksgiving.
Right before.
That's what I meant. It's great to share the space with you, though. And
this
weekend is going to be a lot of fun because we have tonight, which we're about to get into, but we have a weekend of events that I'm looking forward to as well.
Mm-hmm.
Not only kind of great conversation with creatives and beyond in the city, but also the evening is filled with people taking their turn at the Oxcord DJ set. And so we also want to thank Patrick and the whole Oxcord DJ family for getting us ready to... I don't know. Are you going to dance tonight?
I have a bum ankle. So
oh, no. True. You do. I'm so sorry. I'm glad you're back from L.A. I'm glad you're back in Chicago. And we're going to hop into our conversation.
Indeed.
With our first guest tonight is a really dope rapper from Chicago. Someone who raps for real. Like, we are in a moment where I want to distinguish between I love all hip hop music and I love where culture is. And I think that there's also sometimes the distinction between people who are more into the melody of a song, and there are people who I think are in a tradition of pen to pad, someone who takes the language of this craft very seriously. Navarro is one of the illest to do it, so y'all please make some noise for our first guest in the corner store. Give it up for Navarro.
Thank you.
Welcome, man.
Appreciate it, man.
Really excited to talk with you. Before we begin, of course, we do have some gifts for you. I hope, first of all, you've enjoyed a beverage from Stolen Spirits. There's two really incredible cocktails that Emporium has made tonight with Stolen Whiskey.
I love those titles.
Yeah, what are they?
They're In Loving Memory and Pineapple Wildwood.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I know. I got to squint to see them. But yeah.
Pineapple Wildwood is my favorite John Wall song.
Yeah, no, it's incredible. Yeah, yes. And of course, we're talking to John's mother tomorrow, yes. And Michelle. So I hope you're enjoying a Stolen cocktail. We also have some popcorners, the crunchy and wholesome popped corn snack for you. This is a sweet and salty kettle corn flavor.
I've been wanting these. Thank you.
Have? Okay, yes. Good. I'm glad we fulfilled.
Thank you.
Your drink. We also have a Stolen shirt for you as well. Stolen Spirits provide shirt, right. And also...
I thought it was a Stolen, like you stole it. And
I did, from Stolen Spirits, which is kind of them. And also a ball cap, a snapback,
nice.
For you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
you. You wear snapbacks?
Yes, I do. I wear hats a lot.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. Make sure, if you don't mind, make sure that you get close to the mic, just so Ernie can get you on the mic. Ernie, he sound good? Ernie gave you the
thumbs up. Thank you,
thumbs
my brother.
Up. All right.
Thank you.
Very good.
Thank you, Ruben. Thank you, Bill.
Welcome. Want to hop in and talk about kind of where you come from and the art you make.
Yeah, definitely, man.
But let's start with where you come from.
Yeah, my name's Rafael Navarro. I am Mexican American, born and raised in Humboldt Park, Hermosa area. Just grew up in the inner city, man. Hardworking Mexican parents, Catholic household, west side of Chicago. Just blessed to be raised in the environment, but also have a beautiful enough family to make me understand and want more. So growing up in a lot of the environments that don't have the resources and don't have a lot of outlets for us. But luckily, music was my outlet. Writing early on was my scapegoat, and then I found it in the form of music, and then just been going ever since, man. And I've been able to find my space within it.
What did your folks do, or what do they do?
My pops, I mean, they did all kinds of work. They came, when they first came, they were working out, like, in ranches, you know, like 7 days a week.
When they first
cutting
came.
Cabbage when they first came.
They
yeah.
migrated.
They migrated from Mexico, okay. with my three sisters. And so, yeah, they were just working, like, in ranches and just doing it. You know, they would have, like, half days off to get taken out to the grocery store to get then brought back. They had one room that they lived in there, you know, so it was their, you know, that struggle. They actually went back to Mexico for a little bit, and then when they came back the second time, that's when I was born here. And so my dad worked just in bakeries, random jobs in the beginning. Finally, one of my uncles got him a job, like, in a construction company, and he did his thing, man. He paid his dues for 30 years there, and he was able to provide for his family. You know, I admire, you know, he was up every day at 3:30, you know. He worked, like, 2 hours away, but that's where the job was, and, you know, an hour away, and every morning he would make the trek.
Wow.
And yeah, man, he was able to provide for us, and my mom, at that point, you know, he was decent enough where, you know, she was home with us, you know, at the time, too. I had a blood disorder when I was a shorty, so I needed a little more extra attention at the time, so my mom was able to stick around and help through with that as well.
Yeah. How did you start writing?
I was really into hip-hop, and I started writing other rappers' lyrics down. So I was just, like, I would listen to the song, you know, stop, play it, and just write down. This was before you could just Google them, you know what I mean? So then that was the first time I was like, all right, cool. Now I got them. I started trying to figure out the structure and how they wrote it. And then I just took it from there. So it was about, like, 6th, 7th grade, just started, like, mimicking, like, those patterns and trying to figure out how they
were. Who were you listening to? Who were those influences that you were writing down and recording?
Pac, Nas, you know, Jay-Z, Biggie, you know, just like New York kind of rap. So it was just kind of just jotting the lyrics down, trying to figure out how they were writing and how they were putting songs together. And then I just kind of took that upon myself. And then, just like writing with homies, you know, just like, oh, you write raps too? All right, cool. And then we just started kind of getting together and going through the motions and trying to, like, put together, like, those first kind of songs that, you know, you're trying to figure out your voice and all of that. But that was just early on.
How did you find people? Was this through school? Was this in the neighborhood to build a creative community with?
It was high school homies at the time that were interested.
Where'd you go?
Prosser on the west side, Grand and Central. So, yeah, you know, homies that had, you know, piqued their interest as well. And, you know, I would catch them writing a rap. Oh, you write raps? All right, cool. I do, too. And, you know, just kind of piecing that together. And then there was also a space called Bateo Urbano in Humboldt Park that was held a big role in my development as an artist, just because it was a space for us as youth to be able to go and, like, spit a rap and have an open mic weekly. Eventually, they even built out a small studio in the back. That was past the time I was there. But just that, man, just we had a space. We had a space to be creative. And then that community, then I started meeting other people that made beats and DJs and so on and so forth. So a lot of the people that are now active in our community that, you know, came from that, you know, the Stefan Ponces, the Ozones, you know, like, those are homies that, you know, they were in this, they were the shorties around us even back then. So it was dope to just see their development. And, you know, but that's it, man. It's just people that have been around the scene one way or another, and we built that community.
What did your parents think, if anything?
I was crazy. They probably still do.
Do they?
I think they kind of, they probably still think I'm crazy, but they kind of came to terms with it.
Do they listen to your music? Do you know?
I've started doing Spanish music with that intention because I always felt like there's certain stories that I'm not saying because they could only be said in Spanish, I feel.
Yeah.
In the language that I feel like the story is going to resonate with the person that's going to predominantly speak Spanish. So, again, my parents' story, the American dream, whatever it is. So, like, I've purposely, in a way, started focusing on that. So at least my mom can hear a song and kind of get it, too, because she doesn't speak English, especially at the fast rate that hip-hop, you know, lyrics come across.
Yeah.
It took a while for them to understand what I was putting my time. They were just lucky. I mean, they were just happy I wasn't out in the streets and shit. You know what I mean? So they're can I curse? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
okay,
cool. Yeah, all you want to, please. Like,
yeah.
No, you're
fuck
fine.
Fuck shit, damn. All right.
There you go. Got them out. That's
not
good.
Even one, but, you know what I mean? It was just that. Like, they didn't fully get it, but they were just happy that I was doing something. You know what I mean? As long as I still was going to school, as long as I still keeping out of trouble, they were cool with that. It was until they started getting, you know, little things here and there, and, like, you know, little wins for me where they were like, oh, okay, cool, we kind of get what you're doing. But it took a while for one of my parents to come out to one of my shows, even my sisters. Like, you know, hip-hop in the house, in a predominantly Mexican household is not always like, you know, what everyone else is listening to. You know what I mean? My sister's like, you know, Spanish alternative, like, you know, music and, you know, and Mexican music. And, you know, and so I was like the one, I listen to hip-hop. You know what I mean? Like, that's what I, you know, and so... It took a while for them to kind of come around, but they got it eventually. They understood that, you know, and even now more so with me running, you know, this program for the youth. And, like, they kind of see the bigger picture and what my purpose has been with all of this.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, the program?
Yeah.
Sure, yeah. What is the program that you're running?
Yeah, it's called Beats and Bars. I've been running it for the past 3 years. It's based out of Little Village. So my main thing is the one valuable lesson that hip hop taught me early on was that I was able to put value in something that I created. So like the fact that I could put out music, and I remember I was young, but people were asking, I was doing little performances or whatever, and people were asking me like, yo, you got a CD, you got music, you got merchandise. And I saw my friend who did, and he was selling them, and I was like, oh shit, he would just walked out with some money. And I was like, all right, cool. I'm lacking in that part, so let me make sure. So that was the first time where I was like, yo, I could make something, I could put value in it, and I could make money from something that I created. And I think that's a powerful message that a lot of our youth isn't, you know, they don't get a lot. You know, we come from a household where you work, you go to school, and in school, you know, and we need that as well. But I also feel like we also have to get that message across to them that it's okay to venture and try to do other things and try to be self-sufficient. So
one of the lessons of hip-hop has always been to practice that kind of entrepreneurialism.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So, with Beats and Bars, it was tying in... kind of my both of my worlds. So I was working at CPS as someone. I worked with kids with behavioral issues, so on and so forth. And they found out eventually, I guess one of the kids was searching for music, Chicago hip-hop music. And he came across my music and they were like, yo, you rap? And I was like, yeah, because it was like two separate worlds, right? And I never like... What I did for my job and what I did working with youth on that level was different than my music career. It was just two separate worlds. I never really combined them.
Clark Kent, Superman.
No, I mean, not you know, but it was just, I was never going to be the dude to be, yo, listen to my rap. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not there with that purpose. I'm here to serve another purpose. So when they came across it, they're like, yo, you should start a program. And I had never knew that there was value in what I had taught myself. I taught myself how to write. I taught myself how to record myself. I taught myself how to, like, you know, I mixed in, like, whatever, semi-mastered my first two albums on my own, whatever. Like, again, self-sufficiency. It was, you know, like, that's what hip-hop was, right? You made something out of the basic necessity, you know, basic things that we had. So to me, it came across, you know, that way. Once they got me in my ear by starting the program, I went ahead and did it. And it just teaches them how to write a song, how to record it, and how to be able to release it. I mean, just the basic, you know, what's going to pique their interest. I mean, within it, you're delving into some of the other things, their social, emotional interaction that's going on between them, and, you know, just conversations that they normally wouldn't have had with their peers in any other kind of, you know, space. And it's cool because they could still be young, boastful young men. You know, predominantly it's been young men that I work with.
It's just an after-school contest?
Yeah, it's an after-school program. Yeah. And it's at the Little Village Lawndale High School campus. And I'm also working now with Enlace out of their violence prevention program that works at Lanvilleta, too. And we're going to be starting it in one of their locations.
Oh, that's great, man.
Just trying to give them opportunities and options. And that's the basis of it.
That's really dope. I know at some point you went through a name change as an artist, right? Because you Scheme
yeah.
to Navarro.
Yeah.
Is that in part?
It's an inside joke with my friends. They always just talk crap to me, but yeah.
Well, yeah. What is the reason?
Honestly, it was real simple. I started focusing on putting Spanish music out as well. Scheme doesn't translate very well in Spanish. I got interviewed by some lady in like an Univision or something. She was trying to like Scheme, like everything under the world but Scheme. So I was like, all right, if I'm really going to go in that direction, that's probably not going to work. I was also like a little older at that time, at this point, and I felt like kind of silly to try to figure out a rap name, you know, at this point. So I was just, my last name, Navarro, I'm good. You know what I mean? So it kind of just went with that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's really dope.
I fuck
with
it.
Yeah,
yeah,
right. It's simple. I wasn't trying to think of no crazy rap name at like 28, 27 at the time. You know what I mean? I was just kind of like, all right, cool.
But have you shifted your for your mother, but also have you shifted your focus in terms of who you imagine your audience to be in these years? And what do you imagine your audience to be, or your growing audience
to
be?
Yeah, I'm conscious. I'm 35 at this point. I have a 4-year-old daughter. I'm married. You know what I mean? Like
I
understand that.
You rap like a grown man.
Yeah.
You rap like you've been, you put food on the table.
Exactly. Yeah. So to me, it's been more so, I think just both worlds kind of, again, this whole serving youth and then also, I mean, hip hop is a youth driven program. I mean, I'm still thinking about my program. It's a youth-driven culture. So to me, it's like just being able to tie in what I've been doing in both worlds and just coming together as one has been more so like the just finding my purpose. You know, not only just as an artist, just not just a rapper. You know, it was just that mindset. It was like I just rap and I just put out albums and you know music. And it was just like, oh, I have a bigger calling. I have a bigger purpose in what I'm doing. And yeah, so it's just been more so that. And I think, yeah, I guess the name change naturally, I think it is more fitting because it is just who I am in that sense. So as corny or as cliche as that may sound, but I think it sounds dope. Someone who's been trying to navigate two worlds and I guess even consciously trying to keep them separated, where they just kind of naturally fell into place where I'm just like, oh, this is what I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it feels good in that sense.
Well, you put out a great project this year in April, Modern Mexican Art.
Yeah.
Talk a little about what you know, how you made the record, what's on the record, and where also I want to know where people could find it.
Yeah, definitely. Modern Mexican Art is Radio Sonido. It's I took some time off. I had my daughter a couple years back.
And congratulations.
At the time, thank you. Yeah. At the time, I was an artist full time, and all I knew was to just go. You know, in those situations, you don't clock out. You don't. But then also having a family kind of, puts things in perspective. And I wasn't used to like half-assing my music and my art. And so at the time when I was a new father, I felt like I was sacrificing my art. But I also felt that in that, if I tried focusing on it, I was going to sacrifice me being a father. So I felt it was more important for me to prioritize and just be a pop. So for the past couple of years, I focused on that and just kind of repurposing myself. And it I don't know, it's just been... Modern Mexican Art came from all that, from those years of just kind of taking some time off and falling back and just making records. I have Nascent, that producer under, who's, he's a dope producer from here from Chicago. And it was just homies of mine that produced, just like it was a kind of tight-knit kind of situation. But those were records that throughout those couple years that I was just piecing together, and I knew I had something that I wanted to, when I felt that it was time enough for me where I felt like I figured out this pop situation. I know what it is, that's something in itself, And once I got that down and I felt like everything else was falling into place, I felt like, all right, cool, I can start putting out music again.
Well, it's a very dope and focused record. And I also love the blending of English and Spanish. And, you're speaking to multiple communities, and I just really love what you're doing. Where can people find
you. It's on all streaming platforms, Apple Music, Spotify, Google Play, all that. Also on my site, NavarroMusic773.com. I have all my music there, physical copies as well. So, yeah.
Great. And where can people find you on the internet?
Scheme Navarro on most of the social medias. And then my website, again, NavarroMusic773.com.
And the youth program?
It's Beats and Bars. And that website is beatsandbars.org.
Okay, great. Yeah. Well, I think we're going to bring everybody up at the end. But cool. Y'all make some noise for Navarro one time.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate thank you, man. Time. Appreciate you.
Appreciate the time, the energy. Thank you.
Thank you. So we're going to welcome up our second guest.
Tatiana.
Yeah, Tatiana Hazel. Make some noise for Tatiana.
Hi, guys.
Tatiana, you do a lot of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're an incredible singer, songwriter. You're also a designer, right, of clothing and fashion. Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Corner Store.
Thank you for having me.
We have some gifts for you if Max is around. I think Max, look at Max on his shit. First of all, thank you for being here. Max pulled out some Sour Patch Kids for you. I don't know if you rock a Sour Patch. You do.
I do,
good.
Yeah.
And then also we have a stolen shirt and hat for you this evening. You don't have to hold that right now.
Cool, thanks. Well,
you don't have to. I could put that back over here unless you want them. You could share them with Tara and I. You don't have to.
Thank you.
But, so where are you from?
I'm from Chicago.
Okay.
Yeah, so like Belmont Cragen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, and how did you grow up? What's that community like? Who were you as a kid?
I mean, I was always very introverted. I never really had like friends, not in a sad way. I just like chose. I chose it. I was just always working on music, like since I was born, pretty much. But I actually started like writing songs and stuff when I was like 10, I think. But yeah, I just kind of always focused on that, so I didn't really like have time for like other things or like school activities or anything. It's always been music.
Where'd that love for music come from?
I don't know, honestly. Like, my dad always liked singing just for fun, and I don't know, my parents were just really supportive of everything that, like, me and I have two older sisters, so and my oldest sister is a fashion designer too, and like they've just really supported everything that we do. So once I started to like music, they were just really encouraging, so it was really easy to keep going with it.
What did your parents do?
My dad does like car transportation, and my mom does hair.
Oh, well, hair, like she cuts hair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That can be artistic.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, very, yeah. Right? Yeah. I like that into fashion design might be like a small step or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah? Well, art musically, who were some of your early influences?
I was really into hip-hop and heavy metal. I like loved Slipknot growing up. It was like my favorite band, and I loved Missy Elliott. And I loved Shakira when I was younger, like when she was singing in Spanish. And yeah, it was kind of all over the place. But like having my two older sisters, like couldn't really like buy CDs or like go out and get stuff on my own. So whenever they would come home with stuff, or like I would look through their collection when they were at school and stuff, and like their interests kind of like shaped my own.
Yeah, of course. That's nice how it kind of translates down.
Yeah.
But I feel like, I mean, it's kind of jumping around, but I feel like those influences are show through in your designs.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So you don't think that?
I don't know.
Especially like the metal or like more punk rock kind
of
vibe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I switch really often too. It's funny because I just like, even as a kid, I never had like a scene. Like I'd be into like the raver scene, and then also like the goths, and then also like hip hop. So I don't know. I just kind of like whatever I feel. So yeah, I feel like my fashion's not one consistent thing. It kind of like jumps around.
So you still were, you got fits off when you were young too?
I thought I did.
You might have. Yeah. You know, you look back at those old photos and
yeah,
you know.
I'm mostly just like, what was I thinking? But it was expressive, you know.
You got to experiment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I wore a red pleather Michael Jackson Thriller jacket in third grade. It was not a good look. So.
Oh, it wasn't.
Who bought that for you?
My mom. She took me to Venture.
Willingly.
If anyone is old enough to remember Venture. And yeah. Two people. Thank you. Yeah, I got a red pleather Michael Jackson Thriller jacket. But when did you start to fuck with fashion? When did you start to kind of put your clothes together for yourself?
A year ago, like exactly, kind of from, it's been a few weeks since like the actual 1 year anniversary, but yeah, just last year I was playing like shows more often, and I just kind of couldn't find clothes. Like I already dressed pretty crazy on like a daily basis, so I was like, all right, how do I like take it to the next level? So I just had ideas in my head, and I couldn't find anything, so I just went to the fabric store and bought a sewing machine and went on YouTube and just taught myself, and yeah, just been going from there ever since.
And are you're selling some of your garments?
Yeah, so pretty much once I start, like I taught myself how to design, and then I started posting it on my story, just like, oh, a thing I made for the show or whatever. And I got so many responses that were like, can you make me stuff? So I started taking custom orders just through Instagram DMs. And from there, I kind of like started the business, and I like started my own website. And now I do mostly custom work, not like really orders from the site anymore, but yeah.
Who are your influences for your designs?
Honestly, mostly just from like music videos, or like not necessarily designers, because I was never really in the design world until like last year. So mostly just from like life and just going out and seeing what people are wearing in the actual, like, you know, in these different creative scenes. So like what people are wearing, and also just from watching videos and performances, and just, you know, a lot of stuff.
It's been a big year for you artistically, not only with the fashion, but also you put out a record, you put out a single. And so you're having this a moment, I would say. Let's talk about the album, Toxic. Mm-hmm. Where can people find it?
Apple Music, Spotify, SoundCloud. There's probably more, but yeah.
And how do you think about this, your sound? Because I feel like that album is doing a really good job of exploring your range as a vocalist, but also your range and the kinds of records that you can rock over.
Yeah, I mean, I like to say I make pop music, but it's not like just straight on like radio pop. It's like alternative pop, I've been calling it. And then my Spanish stuff is just kind of this different genre that's like reggaeton, cumbia, dembow, like fusion. So yeah, kind of all over the place. But I like to go with alternative pop.
Because you have a lot of different sounds on one record. Like there's something about it that reminds me of 80s synth music.
It also reminds me of like the Cranberries, like really specifically.
Yeah.
I've gotten that comparison vocally.
Especially
that like shakiness.
But the new single, what, See or No, mm-hmm. the sonics of it also sounds kind of almost like a trap record, damn near. You know, there's a lot of like gut and like guttural noise in it too.
Yeah.
So who do you work with musically? Who are you, are you producing your own records? You working with producers?
I am, but that track, See or No, was produced by Poppy Beats and Stefan Ponce. And then I also work with a producer, his name is Drew Polovic, and we collaborated on most of my project, Toxic, and there were like three songs on there that I produced entirely myself, and then currently I'm still working with my producer, Drew, and also another producer, Icon, but yeah, I keep it pretty like tight-knit,
Nice. And the blend of English and Spanish, how do you determine on a record what you're doing, or do you just let the music speak to you and go from there?
Yeah, it's not really like a conscious decision. It's kind of just whatever I'm feeling in the moment, and it's just sort of nice if I get stuck in one language, I can just switch to another if, you know, I have an idea. So it just kind of depends on the song.
Have you always been singing in both?
No, I just started last summer. Yeah.
In Spanish. Mm-hmm. What was the reason for that decision?
I don't know. I just always felt like, I don't know. I have always been really closely related to like my Mexican culture. Both my parents like were born in Mexico and grew up there and everything. And I lived there like for a couple months every year growing up. So it was always a part of my life, but I never really put it in my art or like, I was never really like representative of it, and I just never knew why. Like, it wasn't like I was ashamed or anything like that, but I was just like, well, you know, it's something so special for me that I think I should, you know, represent that more. So then I just started writing in Spanish, and it was pretty easy transition. So,
well, what was the turning point? What kind of put you on to know that you should represent in that way?
Yeah, I think it was just everything going on like in politics and in the world right now, and the way that like I don't like the way that Mexican culture or like certain things are represented, or I don't know, also just the way that a lot of artists have been representing Latin culture positively, and how it's kind of become more of a mainstream thing now, and I never really saw that as a possibility before. So it's been other people who have like really opened those doors as well.
That's dope. Yeah. And so what are you working on now?
I am working on a new EP, and also just always designing clothes, but yeah.
And if people want to be in tune about clothing, mm-hmm. what should they do?
Honestly, follow me on Instagram. That's the best way, at Tatiana Hazel.
Okay.
Yeah.
And music, all the platforms, IG, Twitter, everything like that?
Yeah, everything's Tatiana Hazel.
And how soon can people expect more music from you?
I'm releasing one more song and video this year, and then everything else will be at literally any point next year.
Great. Yeah. And any touring or anything like that coming up?
Next year, but not for this Red Bull show should be like the last thing.
Good. Yeah. All right. Well, we're going to talk about that at the end.
Yeah, yeah.
But thank you so much for being here. Make some noise for Tatiana Hazel, ladies and gentlemen. Victor, where you at, man? Oh, there you are. Welcome, Victor, to the microphone, ladies and gentlemen. Give it up for Victor in the corner store.
Hello.
How are you, Victor?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Thanks for coming out, man.
Thanks for inviting me.
We have for you some Keebler Fudge Stripe mini cookies.
Oh, those are fire.
How do you seem, you don't rock with those?
So, like, I remember when I was a kid, I would take these as a snack to church with me.
Mm-hmm.
One time they melted in the car, and they got all over my clothes, and it was really bad.
Is this triggering? Oh, no. This is triggering. You want me to get it away from you?
I'll take them.
Okay.
Were they still good? They were like on your clothes. You couldn't eat them.
I couldn't eat them. It was really gross.
did you grow up very religious or not after that?
Yeah. I'm trying.
Yeah, I could hold stuff for you.
Okay.
Man.
Cool. I'll just keep this down here.
Okay. You're doing great though.
I'm sorry.
No, not at all.
Why are you making him feel weird, Kevin?
So I'm a little shaken up by those cookies.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, of course. That,
good know, job.
Good job, Max.
No, this is on you.
I didn't pick the... Anyway, Victor, where are you from?
I'm from Chicago.
Okay, good. It's a big city.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Little village, Chicago, okay, for the most
all right.
part. Yeah.
Yeah, good. And what do your folks do?
So my dad's always been a mariachi, like, since he was a teenager.
Wow.
And my mom has been doing all kinds of jobs. She was stuck with motherhood, so, yeah, she's had to do a lot.
Yeah.
So he sings, your dad?
Yeah, he sings. He plays trumpet. He could play violin. Yeah.
Oh.
So musical household.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that had a big impact on what you are doing with your life.
Yeah.
Did he teach you instrumentation, or how did that come about?
So he really tried to pressure me into playing the trumpet, but I always hated it. So, but now, you know, I'm actually thinking about picking it up. It's funny how it comes like full circle. But yeah, he would always try to like get me to join his mariachi band. I was like, Dad, that's really corny.
But that would be hot, though, actually.
No, yeah.
Now that would be really cool.
That would be really fire.
Yeah, it'd be like
cool.
Victor and the mariachi.
Yeah, I know.
I just saw them in, like, their suits. They just look really tight.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to be in that.
So they...
I feel like you could have, like, an updated version. Is that impressive?
No. I think you could, yeah. You could freak it, you know?
Yeah. I'm down, yeah.
That would be... You have to rebel from your parents, I think, in order to come back, too. I think that's kind of how it works.
For sure.
I mean, you're a young man, so you're at that stage where... Well, I guess now you're maybe turning back to where you're rocking with them again?
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah?
Do you, you actually like your parents again?
Right. I think that... People go through
happens.
That, right?
I'm trying to, yeah.
Yeah? Is it difficult?
With my dad... Okay, so this is the thing with my family. My dad's been a mariachi since he was a teenager. My mom also, I don't know if I mentioned this, she had a pop group back in Mexico.
Wow.
I'm surprised. I didn't know, but she made, like, synth pop in Mexico.
Yes.
With
that sounds
her friends.
Really amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, she was really young. It's crazy.
Have you heard her? Have you heard recordings?
I haven't. All the tapes are in Mexico. I haven't been able to retrieve them. I really want to listen to them. But it sucks, man. Like, my dad always put my mom down about, like, making music. And then, you know, she was stuck with three of us. So my mom never really, like, got to live out her dream, you know? So, but I'm trying to encourage my mom. She goes to, like, a lot of karaoke nights now, so it's really
cute.
Wow.
Aww,
cute.
Can she sing?
Oh, my God. She sings. She has the voice of an angel, dog. She's crazy.
Yeah. That's really beautiful.
She's
and you,
so good.
Would you ever? I mean, this. Would you ever collab with your parents?
Definitely,
your mom?
Definitely. Yeah? Yes. My mom. Yeah.
That would be
sure.
amazing. That would be amazing. Well, you've also had a really big year, man. Musically, you're really kind of going through a lot of people paying attention to what you're doing. Over a million streams on different songs on Spotify. It's been a good run for you.
I still don't know what I'm doing.
Okay. Well, so let's. I guess when did you one begin to put. When did you start to put music out into the world?
I started putting music out last summer. So I grew up in like a Pentecostal Christian church where I was serving in like the worship team and like the youth team, right? And so my uncle was actually the worship leader at the church there. And so he would set me up to like sing at youth nights and stuff. And then from there, like I began writing songs. And that kind of just, like, grew into its own thing. And then eventually I was, like, I'm kind of bored with, like, this God stuff. So, you know, I started making my own songs after that.
But you've been singing for a while.
Yeah. I was a church boy for a while, yeah.
Yeah. And then, so when your songs transitioned between being about God, what did you start to write about?
Yeah, you know, stupid teenage stuff like love, you know, heartbreak.
I mean, you know. That stuff still happens when you're older, so, you know.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes as like, younger kids, we trip about really stupid stuff. Like, last summer, I gave this girl, you know Tyler, the Creator?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's, like, one of my biggest inspirations. I gave this girl my Cherry Bomb CD because, like, I really liked her. And then, she turned me down, and then I...
She took the CD?
She took the CD,
wow.
And then, yeah, but, like, I admitted my feelings to her, like, after I gave her the CD, right? And she turned me down. So, like, the week after, I went back to her house. I'm like, can I get my CD back? So,
what'd she say?
She said no. She didn't give it back.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
So she stuck with my CD.
Also, you still have CDs?
No, not anymore. I sold them out, like, months ago.
That's
Wait, when did you give her the CD?
Last year.
Wait, what?
When did you give it to her last year?
Last summer.
Yeah.
Because Cherry Bomb is like a little, it's not that old.
No, but also just that he has CDs, I think,
yeah,
is significant.
Cherry Bombs.
Yeah, I haven't bought a CD for a number of years, I guess.
CDs yeah. are a vibe.
You know? I love CDs.
Oh, yeah. No, I think they're great. I just don't really know where cool. I would play them at this point.
I'd play them on my PS4.
Nice. How would you describe the music you make?
It's like indie, pop, alternative. I don't know, man. I try to like do everything. So it can go from like a really slow song with like, you know, a really gentle beat to like some crazy shit with like really hard drums. And it sounds like very dancey. Yeah. I'm trying to experiment everywhere. Yeah.
You have been put into a category that I know you've thrown off some.
I hate bedroom pop. So
right.
Much.
Okay. So yeah. So let's talk about that categorization. Wait, and why you've thrown
this,
it off.
Oh, yeah. Before we talk about this, I just want to say for the record, Spotify has kicked me off their bedroom pop playlist. So I kind of fumbled the bag, and I'm really really sad about it.
Wait, they kicked you off?
They kicked me off the bedroom pop.
You
playlist.
Got mad or something?
So yeah, I've been ranting about this for a while.
Right.
I don't like being boxed in this whole bedroom pop thing, man. I know I fumbled the bag. It really sucks, but. You know, I just think I come from a place where, like, I didn't really grow up with a lot of resources. I grew up super poor. And so my parents worked their ass off to, like, make ends meet, right? I started with, like, a really shitty PC that somebody at my church donated because we're really fucking poor. and, you know, it just sucks. It kind of feels like gentrification, you know, when someone tries to turn your struggle into a genre, you know, and they try to profit off that. So that's why I'm very like anti-bedroom pop, very anti like, oh, you know, he's just a kid making songs in his bedroom. Like, no, I think it's way more than that, man.
I agree with you. He's a smart young dude, isn't he?
Yeah, I never thought right? of it that
yeah,
way.
Yeah, that's dope yeah. as shit. Yeah. Well, you know, obviously the world loves what you make.
Thank you.
And I know you spent some time in LA this summer.
Yeah.
How was that for you? You were working, right, while you were out there?
Yeah. I ended up meeting Kuko, who's like one of my number one inspirations too. That was really crazy. I never expected that to happen. So.
That's really cool. It also makes sense sonically, right? I mean,
yeah.
you guys.
Yeah.
You know,
we're
they're
part of like the same
movement
like, circle,
in some
yeah.
ways. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you were in studios out there. You're working with different producers. How does that work?
I had like a headliner show at the Smell, which is like one of the most popular venues out there. It's very like DIY. I think the Strokes played there a couple times. It's really cool. Yeah. And then, I mean, I was just making music with different folks out there. I did make a beat with Kuko, but like I haven't written to it. I'm really nervous.
That's what's up. And now, what is coming up for you? I mean, what is this next year, 2019, hold for you?
I'm trying to drop, like, a real project. So this year, I ended up dropping, like, a CD exclusive. I had them for, like, $10, $15, and they sold out in 2 weeks, which is pretty cool. And then I hope to drop an EP this month as well. This one will be, like, on all digital streaming platforms. And then by next year, I hope to drop, like, an album or something.
That's great. You also, I saw you at Lincoln Hall not too long ago.
With Rick Wilson, yeah.
Yeah, and you were fantastic on stage, and your stage show was also a lot of fun. It seemed like you were having a lot of fun, and it became infectious for the audience.
Yeah, yeah.
How do you approach the difference between recording and then putting together something for the stage?
It's crazy. I never really think about what I'm going to do on stage. I just kind of make my songs, and then I'll just play them off while I'm on stage. I like a lot of stage banter. I watch a lot of comedy shows growing up. So
yeah, you had a lot of jokes that night.
Yeah, I'm a mess.
Well, we're big fans of what you do, and of course you're a young man doing it, and so who do you have around you to help you navigate the attention, potential recording. I mean, how do you navigate yeah. the world of the music business as a young person?
So I've been blessed to live in the Chicago area. There's such a great community here. We have people like Tatiana here, Kaina, the These Days family. Like all these people have mentored me a lot and like supported me. I never really expected anyone to like give a shit. But man, it's just crazy. Like we're all really supportive of each other, and I really appreciate that. Because, like, I mean, shit, man, I'm just a 17-year-old kid. And it's just crazy that, like, we can all help each other out and put the word out, you know. It's really great.
Yeah. And where can people find you on the internet?
On the internet, I have a website, victorinter.net.
And socials?
Victor Internet, but it's Victor, I-N-T-R-N-T. Yeah.
And what's the significance of the Victor with the exclamation point?
I just kind of come up with another name. I got too lazy. I'm like, I just want to drop music, man.
Very good. Well, we're happy that you do. Please make some noise for Thank Victor you. In the Corner Store, man. Thank you so much.
Who to pass the mic to?
Yeah, you're gonna pass the mic to Boy Genius. So make some noise for Boy Genius one time. Yes, sir. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. What's up, y'all?
Yo, thank you for being here.
Hey, all you guys were behind me. I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for coming out. We have, first of all, you've been enjoying a stolen spirit beverage, I hope.
I have a couple, and I hope I don't slur.
Okay. We also have some, classic crunchy Flamin' Hots for you.
My girlfriend is going to love this.
Also a stolen shirt and a stolen hat for you. I'll give you afterwards.
She hates it when I don't come home with stuff. Okay.
We got plenty. Thank you, stolen family.
Thank you. Hi. Thank you.
Yeah, man. So what? So where are you from?
I was actually born in Elgin. I was born in Elgin and raised in Carpentersville, about a 45-minute, suburb of Chicago. And then I turned 19. I moved out of my mom's house. And let me just say this. I was been DJing since I was 13 inside of my mother's garage. And
for 6 years till you moved?
Yeah, till I moved out. And then I realized I need to get out of here. Just because, a kid and you're at your mom's house and you want to go do what you want to do and, you don't want to break mom's heart. So, but actually I did. I moved out and I ended up doing that anyway. So, but yeah.
Wait, so you never DJ in front of anyone till you moved?
That's a fact, actually.
Oh, wow.
Until I was 17.
Not even
like
16. Front of friends?
No.
Until
I was 16. Hey, guys, if you are a new DJ and you want to DJ and you want to do it well, I highly recommend you practice your ass off and show no one.
For real?
For 3 years.
Yeah, but that's also...
Yeah, you could clap for that. That's yeah. Real spit.
That is. That's I'm classic serious. DJ training, really, right?
Just don't tell anybody.
Right.
Like, I remember when nobody wanted to be a DJ. Imagine that, y'all. Remember when nobody wanted to be a DJ. I was in elementary school, and I remember my brother had a birthday party for his, for his birthday. And he had a DJ, some dude that was like some gangbanger from the hood in our around the block. And he was playing the most incredible house music that I've ever, on vinyl. And he brought the records, he bought the everything, the whole turntables, the coat. I was in my garage at 7 years old watching this happen. And I'm like, this is amazing. Like, what is this? And then my brother's 7 years older than me, so I also attribute, I think somebody else said that they got influence from their brother or their family. Their
siblings, yeah.
Yeah, and same thing. My brother would watch Spring Break on MTV, and DJ Scribble would be up there DJing in Cancun, Mexico, and they would give him a good minute and a half on screen. Like, he would be DJing his ass off, and I didn't know what that was. Again, I was just like, what? I remember my brother's birthday party. I was like, what is this? Like, what is he doing? Like, is he performing? Who is this? Eminem just performed, so who is this guy? You know what I mean? Like, and they were like, he's DJing. I mean, that sounds so stupid. What is that? What's DJing? And then I just watched him, literally took 10 more seconds after that. He grabbed the mic. He was like, all right, Cancun, are you ready? Boom. Drops DMX Party Up in Here, and the whole place went crazy. And at the time, DMX ruled the world.
Yeah.
So it's like in Cancun, Mexico, all these spring break kids are there. I'm watching this one DJ fuck up the party live on TV. You know what I mean? And
then you're getting it as well, live and direct.
In my living room.
Right.
I'm in my underwear, watching this happen.
Word. I didn't need that bit of information, but I'm glad we have it, though.
I was 11.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I didn't,
it's good.
I didn't have house shorts.
Yo, so coming up in the Chicagoland area, sonically, you're into house and hip-hop, or is it mostly house records?
No, it's actually more hip-hop. I love house, obviously, in Chicago. It's embedded in me. When I first came out of here, and just to go back to the story of, I didn't come out of the house until I was done DJing, or, I learned how to DJ,
yeah.
I just never wanted to deal with that, sweat on my back. You know what I mean? Like, I remember when I first started DJing, my mother would watch me, and I would almost have a panic attack. Like, I couldn't deal with that. Like, I didn't want to be checked. I didn't want to be questioned at all. So when I come out to Chicago, I knew that already. I was like, I'm going to be on point. I have to be on point. There's Bad Boy Bill's on the radio. Too Cool Chris is on the radio. Julian Jumper Perez is on the radio. DJ Flipside, Boogie Boy. All these DJs that are running the radio scene in Chicago, like, I'm listening to them. Mm-hmm. They're coming into my radio station in my bedroom at my mom's house. I remember being 17, holding the antenna for 26 minutes in one position for Monday's class. You know what I mean? My tape. I had a tape deck in 2006. And then everybody had iPads. I still had a tape deck.
Right.
And I was like, I didn't have a computer either. I was like, I don't know what this is. I got a tape deck. I can record everything. What are you talking about? And my battery lasts longer than yours. You know what I mean? Like, things like that. I always felt I had the musical advantage just based off of my DIY, like, roots, Tejano roots that I have. My mother is Tejano. My dad is Mexican from Nuevo Leon. And they have this, like, just go get it. I don't care. Just go do it. Get it done.
When your mom was staring at you, was she just speechless or saying
she's like, don't touch my records.
Oh.
That's Donna Summer and the Bee Gees. I need that. Like, let me just say this. My mom's records, shout out to my mom because she had the cuts.
Yeah.
She already had them all. Like, The Earth, Wind, and Fires.
Right. Full.
Everything.
Full, funk and Latter-day
Disco.
Yo, the
Loose Ends, like, The Midnight Star, like, she had it.
Right.
She had it. And that was actually one of my first blends, Midnight Star into I'm Curious, into Loose Ends, Hanging on a String.
Nice.
And that was an accident in my garage, and nobody knew how beautiful that was except me, and that's how I learned I have to do that shit.
Yeah.
Like, that has to be recreated. That moment, that, like, feeling I felt in that garage by myself where nobody was there, and I literally felt helpless. Like, nobody heard that. Like, that was fucking amazing. And then, yeah, nobody.
All right, when you started to bring it out into the world, what were some of the first parties that you began to play?
I got asked to DJ Club Mambo's for Flow Fridays. With it was a 17 and up spot on Pulaski in Milwaukee. It was the spot for 17-year-olds at the time in Chicago. There was no 18 and up. I mean, there was all 18 and up spots. There was like 3 or 4 18 and up parties you could go to, and that was the one on Fridays, Flow Fridays. And
this is what year?
2006.
Okay.
2006, and I'm still in high school. I'm handing out my own mixtapes. I'm just doing my hustle, and I'm, you know, taking the page out of the radio mixes that I'm hearing. You know, there was a level of DJing at the time. I hate when I get here, because then I have to talk shit about what's happening now, and then I look like the guy that always talks shit. But I'm serious. They were so much better back then.
No, I mean, talk your shit, man. Yeah, do your thing,
okay.
You know? Yeah.
I just don't want to ruffle any feathers, man. I've already done that
too much. But what do you mean
and
by...
And I lost so many bags, Victor. I've lost so many bags by talking shit, bro.
Well, what do you mean by that? What is the, in your mind, what is the distinction between? Because, I mean, there is a kind of golden era of Chicago DJing that comes from the transition from the house party to the club to the radio. And there was, I mean, there were a lot of people doing incredible work in that era. What do you see as the difference between now and then?
There's no responsibility now. There's no responsibility. Like, it literally meant everything to take your song to the radio. And I know, you know, the rest of the scheme has changed, so obviously the power has been shifted. And I'm sure there's radio podcasts, you know, on Spotify and on iTunes and whatnot that have the same weight. And people go, it's like Rap Caviar on Spotify. People want to get on that playlist. But it's like, it's no better than just paying another PD to put music on your... Now it's just been legalized. The payola has been legalized. And it's like, I'm not sure... That's just the radio side, because I have a radio background on that, but like... On a personal level, when it comes to the creative side, it's like, I don't think that should be, like, it shouldn't have never been lost. Like, radio in Chicago is probably the most important. Radio DJs, let me say, mix show, let me just talk about what I know. Mix show DJ shows in Chicago are legit the most important thing for the culture of DJing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know where we lost, and I know where we lost that. A whole bunch of people moved in, said they know what they do, lied on their resumes, and said that they can do this job, but didn't do their research. And it's like, no, you can't just pop up and say you do shit. I want to see you do it. Show me who co-signed you. Show me where what mix you were listening to. Tell me what happened inside of Boogie Boys mix last week. Tell me what happened inside of Bad Boy Bill Mix and Mark, inside of all these, you know, Billy the Kid. Show me what happened. Listen to me, because you're not listening.
Right.
And that was the thing.
Like, well, and those are some of the people you were raised by. Who are some of your contemporaries in the DJ or musical scene in Chicago?
Oh, man. Just like the names, I've been lucky enough to meet all those gentlemen I just named. And they're my friends, like the Flipsides and the Boogie Boys, the Julian Jumpin' Perez's, the DJ Nonstops, Timbuktu, obviously.
Yeah, you were, and that was one of your colleagues, you know, rest in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace to Tim forever and always.
Yeah.
I learned so much just by watching. I was always a student. And like I said, I just learned based off of just being in my garage. I just didn't want to feel like that anywhere. So I was like, I'll just shut the fuck up until I knew what to say.
Mm-hmm. And now, where are some of the places where people can see you regularly, or you know, what all do you have? I know you have a lot going on. So what are some of the things you have going on?
Man, I know we skipped over a bunch of shit.
No, it's all right.
Just to talk about Timbuktu really quick.
Yeah, please.
Timbuktu is the main reason why we kind of shifted in radio. When Timbuktu passed, all of the change of the guard, everything that was real, and everybody that was holding on to, like, you know, the people that couldn't get to Timbuktu because he was Timbuktu, finally decided to create their own whatever fugazi shit of whatever Timbuktu made and try to fill that gap. But it's like, those shoes are so big. And Tim's inspiration is not just mine. Like, he literally changed the face of DJing with DJing, and then behind the scenes of how you work and are presented as a DJ, the protection that a DJ deserves. Like, you need to be a part of some type. If you're going to be a part of an agency, well, they got to protect you. They got to give you the right money and, you know, make sure, like, for instance, I was telling some of the people today that are performing on Sunday for the Chicago event for Red Bull. It's like, yo, make sure that you're protected. Like, make sure Red Bull gives you all the pictures. Make sure Red Bull gives you all the content, because you're going to need that for future and for the rest of this month while this event is going on to keep promoting this event. You know what I mean? Like, and that's how, that's like, to me, it's the basics.
Yeah.
But every Tuesday, I learned that, just those basic things to me, just how to be protected from Timbuktu. So when Timbuktu passed away, I took over his party. I just put it on my back and I was like, it needs to happen. It needs to keep going. In 11 days, we planned an event at the House of Blues. After his passing, and we started another chapter right there, where now we do an annual event at the end of the year, every Tuesday or last Tuesday of the year for Timbuktu at the House of Blues. This year, it's December 18th. And then now, every Tuesday at Beauty Bar, still for Timbuk Tuesday, is a $2 cover. We donate everything to the Timothy F. Jones Foundation that we started. And I'm sorry, I'm not making eye contact. I just want to make sure.
Yeah, no, get it. These are also incredible parties that you're throwing. I mean, these are beautiful. You know,
I think so. Yeah, I'm having a great time. Yeah, I'm still having fun.
Yeah, you can make some noise for the party.
Thank you. Yeah, make some noise for that.
Yeah.
And then based off of that topic, on Fridays, I DJ a party at Untitled that I throw called These Are the Breaks. It's literally the alternative hip-hop party on a Friday night. You know, you go to a hip-hop party on a Friday night, you expect to see some bottles, some Instagramming, you know, and some, you know, nothing wrong with that. I love doing it. It's fun. I'm saying there's an alternative now. It's Friday night downtown where you get to come and listen to some hip-hop samples. You listen to some good hip-hop, some old-school reggae, some old-school funk and soul, all in one night. And there's a cap on it. Like, we won't cross over. There's Untitled is a beautiful spot all over. There's another party happening in the main room. If you don't like what's happening there,
right,
jump in there every Friday night.
Don't.
10 to 2.
And where can people find you on the internets?
My website is, it's kind of funny. I wish we could talk about this, but I don't want to do that. It's BOIJEANI.US. And if you just type it in, just Boy Genius, just put the dot before the US.
Nice.
And then at Boy Genius everywhere, BOIJEANIUS.
Great. And is there a thought for you to get back into radio or move towards some regular?
You know what? I was thinking about the sit down right now. Like, I need to start a podcast with all of my resources and everything. Not even a podcast. Like, I already have mixes I upload.
Yeah.
But just give them more of a directional channel. Like, for instance, like Tatiana has a beautiful song out right now that I was telling her earlier, like, yo, I need that.
Yeah.
And it's like through my channels across the world and things that I've already experienced in the tropical world, it's like that can fit in my world, and those DJs that always have my back will listen to that just because I play it, and they'll be like, what is this? And then it's just a handoff. It's just this constant, like, music, and that goes for everyone that makes music in Chicago. Like, if you are making good music, and obviously if you're sharing a stage with me, you're doing good shit. So you guys should be very, very proud of what's happening for yourselves. I'm not saying I'm the end all be all, but I've been DJing in Chicago for 14 years, and I've seen the whole Red Bull move through here, and I'm just proud of what's happening with Red Bull now.
Well, we would also love to talk with you about the podcast, and maybe, you know, WGN, I'm sure, would rock with it. But, yeah, it'd be very fresh to have you out here. Make some noise for Boy Genius one time, y'all. Okay. Y'all, you know, what we're going to do real quick, if we could welcome back all of our guests back to the stage. So if you don't mind staying up here, we want to welcome back Tatiana and Victor and Navarro. Please make some noise for all of our guests this evening in the corner store. I'm gonna. Oh, Max has got chairs, everybody. Thank you. And Ernie has microphones for everybody as well. Are you guys having a good time so far? Thank you all, the Emporium, for being in the building. Of course, we always want to shout out our sponsor, Stolen Spirits. We also want to thank WGN Radio. We want to thank Emporium Chicago and the pop-up space for having us this evening.
And our proceeds are going to John Welt Foundation tonight?
Tonight, they're going to Young Chicago Authors.
Okay.
And tomorrow, they're going to John Welt Foundation.
Okay.
And then on Sunday, they are going to the Graffiti Institute. So so what's happening tonight, for every drink that you buy, Emporium and Stolen Spirits. Spirits is donating $1 of each cocktail. So that's $2 per cocktail to three nonprofit organizations in the city of Chicago. Tonight, proceeds go to Young Chicago Authors. Tomorrow night, they go to the John Walt Foundation. And on Sunday, they go to the Graffiti Institute. So make some noise for Emporium and Stolen Spirits for supporting great organizations in the city of Chicago. Welcome back, everyone. Everyone's mics are working.
Check.
Okay, Ernie, we're doing good. Thank you, man.
Okay.
So, of course, Sunday, there is a really big show. If we can talk about maybe what people can expect as part of the Red Bull Music Festival that's in Chicago all of November, putting on for a lot of Chicago artists. I'm so excited for what this show will be and what it represents. But what can folks expect from you all on Sunday?
I mean, I don't even know what to expect from everyone, so I'm excited. But for myself, I'll have, like, a full band, and I'm trying out some new, like, visual projects as well.
Dope.
Me and my homie DJ Sen got a dope show put together. I got a couple homies coming on stage and doing a song with me as well. So it should be a good time, man. I'm looking forward to it.
DJ Sen, shout out DJ Sen, too. Yeah, he's also a really, really dope DJ as well.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Me and my laptop.
Yeah. Excellent.
Me and my laptop.
All right. Very good. Victor, can we anticipate some dance moves from you?
Maybe.
Okay. All right. I hope so, for the people.
It's cool that Red Bull has kind of created the space for the Latinx community. You know, when they first contacted you, like, what was your initial reaction to that?
I'll say it meant a lot, just because I had been inactive for the past, you know, a little bit of time when I was trying to just refocus myself. So it just felt good. To, you know, that knowing that the work that I've done, you know, up to this point is still respected, and it's still, you know, that people still understand that what I bring, you know, to the culture and to the scene. And so, yeah, just getting that call and letting me know that I play somewhat of a role in the scene, you know, it just validated that. And I appreciate that, especially for something new like this and focusing, because being Latino in the music industry, being Latino in hip hop is definitely an uphill battle. You know, first world problems, but, you know, it is, and it's definitely something, you know, a different way of having to navigate it. So it feels good to, you know, to have these opportunities and these situations coming up for our genre. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I also want to say, Navarro, you've also consistently put on for hip hop music in this city.
Yeah.
So in terms of where you are in the historic place of culture in Chicago, you play a very important part.
Thank you, brother.
No,
I appreciate
thank you, man.
Thank you.
What about y'all? How do you guys feel about the Latinx community and the spaces that, I guess, Sunday represents, but the larger community in the city?
I have to just point out that in all of the years that Red Bull has been working here in Chicago, a dedicated Latin indie Chicago music event has never happened. Never. And we have our own stage, y'all. Like, for real. Like, they gave it to us. And they gave us microphones and shit. You know what I mean? So it's, I'm serious. Like, all jokes aside, like, this is major for our community. I'm proud to be Mexican American. I'm proud to be Tejano, also raised. Like, I'm proud of that. And to see Chicago finally, in my eyes, it just never happened here. I don't know if it's a finally. It's just like it's never happened on this level of stage. And
well, isn't there? I mean, and this is a question. Isn't there a rise in a creative community for Latinx folks in the city? I think it's because you all are doing such incredible work. But do you feel, like, as a member of that community and some of the driving forces of that community, do you guys feel it as a rise or a swell?
I definitely feel like we've got our foot on everyone's neck, and that's Chicago's attitude. Like, I can't speak for them, but I know for myself, like, the contribution that we have as Latinos in Chicago, it's a big deal when we start putting, you know, points up on the board. Like, it's a big deal. Like, those are big-ass points for us, and I'm proud of what's happening right now. And, like, even myself, I'm a hip-hop DJ. I'm in a urban black community 80% of the time, but I'm still popping things off in my own world as far as my Latin roots by making cumbia music and contributing that way, you know what I mean, and making remixes on that set. And I think this stage is the most perfect thing. I don't know, for me personally, it lines up perfectly. Like, I can't wait.
Yeah,
same. I think, like, I've just been making music by myself for so long that I don't know if I would have known a lot about, like, different artists doing, like, similar things to me if it wasn't for, like, being put, like, in similar showcases. Like, I've done a show with, like, Victor and Karina before, and, you know, I love everyone on the lineup, and yeah, it's just cool to be a part of it.
I mean, I think there's, like, a big movement towards, you know, all art or Latin, even Latinx artists, you know, Bad Bunny, and you have, like, Kylie Uchis, and, you know, I think there's, like, a big push towards that, and you know, it's really cool that it's happening in Chicago right now.
Don't forget
too.
6ix9ine.
Oh, no, we're leaving
6ix9ine. Him all the way out.
And we got Princess Nokia added.
Which is really exciting.
Shout to that.
Well, and I wonder if, Tatiana, what you said earlier, I wonder if part of the reason why we do see this swell, this rise, this you know, coming together collectivity of a Latinx community is in part of a response to some of the fuckery of American politics in this moment. And so in Chicago, I wonder how that plays in your navigating as well, moving about the city. You know, some of you touched on issues of gentrification, not only in your music, but also in your communities. I mean, you know, Navarro Humboldt Park looks very different now than it did when you were coming up.
Yeah, definitely. I work firsthand in Little Village with a lot of our youth, man, and they need our support. And it's not just in that community, in a lot of our communities in our city. They need outlets. They need resources. They need somebody to at least even just reach out to them. So, like, you know, try to find it in you to reach out to the shorties in your communities, man. Find ways of getting across to them. Find ways of connecting, you know, helping them connect the dots, you know. You know, we're blessed to you know, for the opportunity that our parents, you know, gave us to bring us into this country and be able to have certain things that you know they didn't. And I think it's our responsibility to some extent to guide the next generation.
I was going to say the same because yeah. I was just that's not your responsibility. You guys know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's not yours.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not here to save the world.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want y'all to work. I want y'all to be as creative and free as possible.
Yeah.
It's our job. As the last generation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we got so much game. Like, yeah. we dealt with record labels. We know the whole scheme. No pun intended.
No pun intended. Yeah.
We know the whole thing. We know how it works. So it's like, you know, even though it's still all DIY right now, oh, man, like, there's so many gems that still will never change. Like,
yeah.
And so what I mean, like, I say that with a loose heart. Like, just focus on all the shit that you have in front of you right now. And then when you decide to look back, you could just look and see if you want to contribute, you know, if you want to help or if you have to help. You know what I mean? Hopefully you blaze the trail so bad that no one can follow you. You know what I mean? Like, but I also participate in After School Matters. Like, it's important. You have to do that. You have to teach these kids. I teach DJing. I talk business to some. I teach at the Scratch Academy and talk business. Like, things that have to happen in my community, like, those are keys. They need to be handed off.
Well, I think one of the powerful things about this moment is that the tools of democracy, or the tools of technology, allow people to respond to the moment. And so, you know, I think it's powerful that the work you all are doing, and even the shifts you've made in, you know, recently in terms of who you're addressing in your music. I think that is very powerful. I think young people need examples of folks in the arts, creative folks doing work that is outside of any particular box. And I think all the work you do, you know, collectively, individually, also is transcendent. So, you know, thank you for making Ill Shit in the city of Chicago, for staying in the city of Chicago. We're grateful that you're on the corner store, in the corner store for our year anniversary, and are really looking forward to Sunday. So, y'all make some noise for our squad here this evening. We want to thank you all for coming out tonight. We really want to thank, of course, our sponsor, Stolen Spirits. Make some noise for Stolen Spirits this evening, ladies and gentlemen. Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the corner store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the corner store at cornerstore_pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the corner store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.